Hi, it's good to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name is Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Well, when we think about leadership qualities, we very often think of things like vision and ambition and authority, or maybe management skills and strategic thinking, that type of thing, and the ability to make good decisions. When we think of leadership, though, we may not always think of creativity. But according to Ken Weitzma, creativity is exactly what we need in both life and leadership.
Ken is a college president, the founder of the Justice Conference, and the author of a new book called Create versus Copy. And in his book, Ken says that we're all creative beings and we can harness our creativity to do good, to achieve justice, and to change the world. Welcome to the program, Ken.
Thanks. Appreciate you having me.
Now, Ken, on this claim that creativity can do all those things, lead to justice and change the world, how so?
I think we have to understand creativity a little bit better as different from or opposed to art. Most people think of art when they think creativity, so painting, drawing, photography, singing.
Yeah, so someone like me thinks all of a sudden, well, I'm not any of those things, so I'm not very creative.
Yeah, and the phrase we use is, I don't have an artistic bone in my body. And what I try and make is a distinction that art is a learned skill or talent, but creativity is a human trait. And so all people are born creative, and we see this when we study children and look at kind of early development. We have big imaginations, we dream, we're creative. But somewhere along the way, we educate that out of kids, and we become adults who say we don't have a creative bone in our body. But I think leaders and managers, if we're able to harness creativity or imagination to greater effect in our day and age because of the high rate of societal change, we're going to be much more successful.
Ken, I kind of get a bit nervous about this term creativity and creatives. You know, it's quite fashionable and it gets overused a bit. In your book, Create versus Copy, you kind of talk about how there are two types of people who create and people who copy. But you don't kind of mean this whole, well, some people are sure creative and some people are just followers and they're always going to be a bit boring.
Yeah, I like when people say there's two kinds of people in the world. It's kind of a fun little dichotomy. And what I said is there's two kinds of people in the world, those who create and those who copy. And the interesting thing, if you think of copying, you're always following where someone else has already gone, where someone's blazed the trail. So if we're talking about leadership, ultimately copying means following. I don't mean copying, you know, obviously we all do that, best practices, borrow templates, evolve things forward. But I'm really talking about a mindset here. And I think that if we have a creator mindset, if we dream, if we're willing to take risks and chances, we're going to be at the front edge of leadership.
And is that for everybody? Like, not everybody's going to be a leader, right?
So the interesting thing is some people are more creative, right, than others, entrepreneurial, bigger risk takers, but different teams or staffs can function in a collaborative kind of creative way versus in a copier mentality. So it's really how you set up your leadership teams or how the organization incentivizes new ideas, et cetera, that really makes the difference. So even if you're not by nature more entrepreneurial, you can still find yourself in an environment that nurtures good ideas that way.
One of my questions around these sorts of things is that typically when we talk about them, we'll bring up examples of these amazingly creative people. Like this morning, I was reading an article about the guy who shaped my surfboard, the surfboard that I have at the moment, which is a worldwide phenomenon, fabulous surfboard. And, you know, he's done amazingly well, blah, blah, blah. But for every one of those guys, there's a lot of people who tried that and failed horribly.
Sure.
What do we do with that?
Yeah, I think we need to start at the other end of creativity. So when I tell people that everyone's creative, I say things like nobody delegates the naming of their dog. There's things that we do every single day that really show imagination, show creativity, and I talk about starting there. Creating a culture in your home that's different than maybe the culture was when you grew up. And what can you do with your kids to really spur them on, motivate them? What can you do with your spouse or in your city or whatever it might be, your business? And so trying to move people forward with little steps rather than saying everybody should be like Steve Jobs.
Well, that's a relief. Now, when did you start to recognize the creativity in everyday life? Where did you see creativity in unexpected places or places you hadn't noticed it before?
Yeah, well, I've got four daughters, so I think a lot of things are born out of parenting for me these days. But I really began to look at creativity as related to justice, that if we're trying to make the world a better world, pursuing justice, if you will, that you find a lot of that has to do with belief, possibility, hope, creativity. There's an interesting thing that fear and faith are kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum. And fear is a well-known killer of creativity. And it turns out that faith is a well-known enhancer of creativity. If you have faith or if you have belief, it opens up imagination, dreaming, risk-taking, hope. And those things are significantly connected with the people and the movements we see that are shaping the world. So I was kind of exploring it from the justice side and then transitioned to, wow, I think this is for everybody.
Now, you mentioned faith. Where does this idea of creativity fit into the Christian worldview, which I know happens to be one you hold?
Yeah, so the Christian worldview, I think the beginning of a theology of creativity is simply that Genesis 1:27 reads that God created them. In the beginning, he created them, male and female, he created them in his image, you know. And so three different times it says creativity in that verse, which is kind of the hallmark Judeo-Christian worldview verse. And if you were on a desert island and somebody asked you, what is the image of God, and all you had was that one verse, there's only one thing you could say with grammatical certainty, and that would be God is a being, a creative being who creates. So to be made in the image of that God means we're creative beings who create. So I think it really starts at kind of the foundation of our the Christian worldview, if you will. And then even when God created, he created for a purpose. So he separated light from dark. He separated dry land from sea, all with the purpose of bringing about a flourishing community. And so creativity ultimately aims at making space for life. And we know this when we kind of create as well, that what we're really trying to do is create space for flourishing. So those things are very intricately connected, the purposes of God, faith, and creativity.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith. We're talking to Ken Weitzma, who's the founder of the Justice Conference and the author of Create Verse Copy. Now, Ken, what's the role of imagination in all of this? That seems to me to be quite important.
Yeah, in the book, I have a whole chapter on imagination. It's actually what I would say is the spark of creativity, where it begins, or the genesis of it. And Sir Ken Robinson kind of put me onto it first, but this study of divergent thinking that was done, longitudinal study, which means it goes through time, right? So you study kindergartners and then 5 years again and then 5 years again. And they were tested on divergent thinking, which is a lot like, here's a paperclip. How many different uses are there for a paperclip? And if you come up with 10, you're kind of normal. If you come up with over 100, you're a genius. And, you know, so what if the paperclip can float? What if it was made of gold and you made jewelry out of it? What if? And 95% of the kindergartners that took the test scored at the genius level. And in 5 years, that was halved. And then the next 5 years, it was halved again. And so
vote for the education system,
yeah.
Isn't it?
It's standardized testing, right? But so I think it's that idea of imagination that can carry us forward that children have so well that we lose over time.
How can we embrace creativity in our everyday lives? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think the first thing is just to believe that it's possible. Creativity is a lot like a muscle that can atrophy or it can be developed. And so when we begin to realize we're creative beings and we do little things, read creative books, surround ourselves with creative people, learn more, watch documentaries, keep pads of paper around us so that we can make notes, which allow our brains to kind of develop thoughts further. When we begin to do these things, it really accentuates the creativity in us, and that's going to affect our life and our leadership. And so I think the first thing I want to do is just encourage people to do that and then just see where it might take them into unexpected places.
I'm interested in the link that you make between creativity and justice in particular. These are both really big interests of yours. And I think we'd often think of those as totally separate things, partly because of what you say about,
sure. You
know, we think of creativity in terms of art and the individual, and justice is this kind of community-minded thing. How do those link?
Yeah, I call it generous creativity, which is creativity that aims at making space for life. In the Christian worldview, it would be joining God in the reconciliation of all things. When Jesus says in the New Testament, tear down this temple and I'll build it again in 3 days, what he was really saying is my sacrifice or the cross for Christians is a creative act that's going to accomplish reconciliation with God. It's going to be a new temple. So we usually think of that in very religious terms or very ritualistic terms, but what Jesus was doing was creating a way forward that didn't exist before. And so I think what we're doing is when we're being creative, ultimately with the idea of bringing reconciliation to the world, we're joining in that process of making things new, making things better, making things right as they ought to be.
Some of the problems facing our world and facing us as individuals as well are fairly massive and intractable, and
sure.
It makes sense that creativity would be needed.
Yeah, creativity is how you get around a place where you're stuck. I tell an analogy in the book. One of the earlier Pixar movies was A Bug's Life, and it kind of, when they opened credits, you see all these ants marching in line, kind of like machines, and there was a sergeant ant, and he's got a clipboard, and he's talking and watches as a leaf falls down, big leaf, and it lands right in the row of ants. And he hands his clipboard away and runs down to this line that is now stopped, and everybody's panicking. They don't know what to do. And he grabs the first ant, and he starts walking around the leaf, chanting, "Around the leaf, around the leaf," and then the next one. And then pretty soon the line starts to go around the leaf. And I think we have a lot of those leafs in our life where we're stuck or we're bogged down, we can't get around it. And creativity or imagination is one of those ways that we get around the leaf, and then we're able to continue again.
Creativity and the need to seek original solutions to problems sort of raises this specter of failure. Mm-hmm. You know, creativity is risky.
Yeah.
What do we do with how daunting that prospect is?
Well, I think it comes back to that question of what I called Leadership 1.0, which was really about systems and efficiency, management strengths, if you will, and what I call Leadership 2.0, which is the combination of creativity and leadership, which is what I think the world calls for today. And in Leadership 1.0, I remember so many authors and speakers saying, if you fail, you've lost your leadership. People stop believing in you. You obviously couldn't navigate the solutions. How can they trust you for the next venture, if you will? So failing was something that undercut your leadership. I think that with Leadership 2.0, it's really something that has to be a part of the process, is the willingness to fail, the willingness to make mistakes, that you're always reaching and trying, and that's part of how you move forward. And so we have to kind of create cultures that allow for that risk-taking. Certainly, you can manage risk, but allow for that kind of risk-taking and failure, and not to have that seen as a blemish on somebody's record, but as a learning experience.
Ken, children tend to have fabulous imaginations. It gets beaten out of us as we get older. But is imagination for children or also for adults?
It's definitely for adults, too. I have a whole chapter in here where I talk about J.R.R. Tolkien, the famous novelist of Lord of the Rings, and C.S. Lewis, who wrote in many different genres. And C.S. Lewis actually says one of the reasons you write children's literature is not that your audience is children, but that children's literature as a genre is the best for expressing truths that you're trying to get across. So sometimes children's literature is a better truth-telling mechanism than another genre. And when he wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which was kind of his first famous children's book, he dedicated it to his goddaughter Lucy, and he told her, "May we all grow old enough to read fairy tales once again." And what Tolkien and Lewis believed was that fantasy, fairy tale, all of those things sometimes got at truth better than the cold, hard facts. And that as we grow older, we begin to realize that the world is really magic and that some of these things really do take place. And so I think imagination's an adult thing, and it needs to become increasingly more so, that we believe some things about the world that don't get cashed out in our cold, hard facts.
We get very cynical too, don't we, as we get older? You're trying to help us to be less so.
Well, I'm trying to open up our minds to apprehend maybe all of reality. And there's a faith part here too, which is sometimes we have such small imaginations that those of us of faith that have requests or are trying to pray only would see one answer to that prayer. I need money. If money comes, then God answered the prayer. And I think there's a myriad of ways that prayer might be answered or other things can happen in this world, but our imagination needs to be big enough to apprehend those or to see that. So imagination actually plays into the pursuit of God.
Well, this is all very intriguing. And I think you'd want to say to people you're trying to inspire and encourage them. And I'm sure that's what people will find from this book. So Ken Weitzmass, great to have you in. The book, I'll just remind you, is Create vs. Copy. Embrace change, which most of us are scared of. Ignite creativity and break through with imagination. It'll be a great read for lots of people. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Life and Faith. If you enjoyed this episode, then why don't you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes? You can just type Center for Public Christianity in the search box to find us.
While you're there, why not check out a couple of our other interviews? One of our recent favourites is an interview with Dr. David Smith on US religion and politics.
Next week on Life and Faith, we're looking at grief and how we cope with loss. Hope you can join us then.